Hi, everyone. Welcome again to our series about highlighting our staff and therapists at Evoke Therapy Programs. And today, joining me, we have Judith Sidora. So happy to have her as our guest and to talk about her background and what she does, what she brings to the table when she works with our Evoke clients, and also about her passion. Because one thing about Judith is she's passionate in all of her life, and she brings that to the job. So welcome, Judith.
Thank you so much, Brad. I really appreciate just being on the podcast and being able to kind of just talk to you and share a little bit more about what I do and why I love doing what I do. So I really appreciate this time.
You bet. So let's start there. Let's start with your background, your educational, professional background and training, and what you bring to the table in your current area of work, your expertise, and you know, what do you bring to the table when working with clients?
Yeah, good question. So I am a licensed marriage and family therapist here in the state of Oregon. I moved here recently to Central Oregon from Las Vegas about 8 months ago in April. And so it's been really nice to be in the Central Oregon area. It's so beautiful and green, and to be in different seasons compared to Vegas. But yeah, in Vegas, I got my master's in marriage and family and therapy, and I worked in outpatient, and I was a middle school counselor working with adolescents for quite a bit. I loved it. I loved being in the classes. I loved being in the school systems. And I started to crave and wanted to work more with the family. I saw a need there. And as I continued to work with adolescents, I felt like, you know, there's deeper level work here. And I want to touch base with like the parents and kind of be a support for them and in any way that I could. And so that's when I got my master's in marriage and family therapy and became a licensed intern in the state of Nevada, and worked for a wellness center that was in correspondence to the school that I was a counselor in. Mm-hmm. So I was able to do all of it. I worked with couples, I worked with families, I did parent educational workshops. And then also I still worked at the school as a school counselor, and I just loved it. That's actually how I came into contact with you, Brad Reedy, and in regards to your book, The Journey of the Wholework Parent, kind of looking at the resources that were out there. And I fell in love with the resources that you offered within that book and did a workshop through there. And that's how I found Evoke in that way, which, you know.
Yeah, that was a treat to find and see that posted on social media. And it was nice to meet. I'm so grateful that we got to meet through that. I'm wondering also if you can talk a little bit about kind of your background personally. What in your own personal history and background do you think shapes or brings you to this work, if you will?
Yeah, so I'm actually currently in my doctorate program for marriage and family, and it's the family systems work again. I have a heart for adolescents and for the youth and this generation. And part of that is because of just my own story as a youth who struggled also with depression and anxiety. And I really had a hard time. Parts of the reasons why I had a hard time had to do with a lot of my family dynamics, my relationships. My father wasn't really present in my life. And my relationship with my mom was pretty, it wasn't the healthiest. And I'm a Caribbean woman, I'm Haitian. And so my culture and my race has a lot to do with some of my upbringing and the difficulties that I had in regards to just healthy communication within my family. And what I experienced as a teen was so profound for me. Like it was something that I could identify with in regards to why I was depressed, why I was anxious, and why it was hard for me to navigate the world in the place that I was at. And part of that is I didn't have a safe place to really talk to parents. I didn't have a safe place to express what it's like for me to be in my own skin and to experience not just with race, but just in everything, just experience adolescent development and what that means and peers and fitting in. It was tough for me. And so I wish I would have had parents that were more in tune with what was going on in my life and knew how to have those conversations with me and what to do and to be a better support. And so that history and that past has really driven my desire to seek out to my passion for working with adolescents right. and their families. And preferably I've worked with so many different types of clients in terms of, you know, race or even academia issues or problems with substance use and things like that. So, and anxiety and depression. But primarily my focus lately has been working with adolescents of color, clients uh-huh. of color, clients who identify as others in specific ways. And part of that is also working with adopted families, the line of work that, you know, we're in, you know, the kids of color and the clients of color that we see that out in the field are predominantly adopted. They're adopted in white families. And so that's a lot of the kids that I work with out in the field. And I just love it. And so I'm currently certified in the state of Oregon to work with foster care and adoption, have adoption training. And that's particularly yeah. pertaining to attachment and relationship building, attunement, that kind of stuff. And there's a lot there having to do with like research and what research now says about relationships and connection right. For adolescents and the brain development. And so there's a lot of training that I do with that, as well as the added layer of race and what that looks like for interracial families or transracial adoptees. And so my primary focus is really creating a space for families and for kids to be able to navigate some of those things, some of those conversations that are those topics that are really hard to have that pertains to depression, anxiety, and substance. You have the symptoms, but what's underneath that? And a lot of it boils down to connection and being seen and being heard and being felt, right? And so and that comes from just my own history and my past, even though I'm not adopted. So that's part of the reason why I love doing the work that I do, and I'm driven towards that, if that answers your question, Brad.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, what I love about what you're saying is therapists that acknowledge their background. I mean, really, that's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. You're just acknowledging the background that you have and how it contributes to your interest, your passion, and your work. And so I think that kind of honest, that transparent kind of exploration is really, really valuable. And I've worked with so many therapists who just imagine that they're experts here and fully healed and mm-hmm. have no background issues. And so they're kind of the clients, their gift to their clients. And what you bring is so human and so easy, so accessible to connect to. So I really appreciate that about you. Another thing I appreciate about you is the ways that you promote mental health and wellness through your, you know, in your area of expertise. And so I wonder if you can talk about that, about the some of the ways that you promote mental health and wellness through your area of expertise as a marriage and family therapist.
Yeah. I do a lot. So I work with, like I mentioned, transracial adopted families, interracial families. And so in working in wilderness therapy, I really bring just a lot of psychoeducation. That's why I promote it. That's the first and primary thing, is educating families, educating even the adolescents that I work with in what's going on. Like, what are the topics? What are the things that we should be talking about? You have, let's say you have a kid who comes in and you're seeing substance use, you're seeing maybe gang activity or so many of these outbursts or what you call oppositional disorder or, you know, that kind of stuff. When you're seeing those things, like what's underneath that? What's the layer there? And what I found is just really creating a space to talk about the fact that these kids who are navigating these things, they're in these maladaptive behaviors that we obviously have seen, okay, that's not effective. That doesn't work for the child, but their reason why they're in that is because it's connected to something, that they're missing that actually is valid. And so I guess an example to that would be having that conversation with a kid, invalidating a kid who is in gang activity or who is seeking, you know, this in these maladaptive behaviors, but they're doing with a specific group of peers. And let's say the group of peers are kids of color, and they're trying to navigate and create a family of themselves because they live in a white family or they're in predominantly white environments. And me being able to validate, wow, you tried to find a place where you felt at home, even though the behaviors are not so great, Yeah, I don't want you to do drugs. Of course, I wouldn't want you to do that. And, you know, being involved in some criminal activity. But the idea behind that is you're looking for something. You're looking to be seen or to fit in somewhere. And the way that I promote mental health is really honoring their symptoms in some ways. I mean, it's there for a reason. Right. And I have to notice that. I have to say, I see why you're doing that. That makes sense. You tried to survive by doing this. Is it the best? No, but it makes sense. And so my way of promoting that is through working with the demographics and the clients that I work with is I have to normalize their mental health. I have to make space for their mental health, not demonize it or criminalize it or whatever ways that we can really label it as so bad that the kid or the family feels very shameful for what they do. And so, yeah, I think that's the best way that I can say that I promote mental health is embracing whatever mental health spectrum that they're in, embracing it, trying to understand it.
That's wonderful. That's so healing, so fantastic. So tell us a little bit more about your area of expertise, the niche that you operate in.
So I mentioned earlier that I trained in foster and adoption training, and so a lot of attachment training in that. I also do focus a lot on multi-generational trauma among clients of color and what that actually looks like. And also to there, we have what's called the Evoke Intensives. And so I love participating in those. And so when working with trauma, using an experiential way to work through trauma. So to be able to navigate and work with adolescents, families, or individuals of any sorts, to be able to tap into like the trauma work using psychodramas, which is what we use at the intensives. There's a variety of different ways that I work with clients in treatment. But I think overall, if I had to say expertise, I'm always so daunted when I hear the word expertise, right? Because it's like this pressure of like, okay, what's my expertise at? I like to say expertise is more so like, what's my passion, right? What do I like to study more? What do I like to train more? What my experience has been? And so I would say being able to, create space, clinically and relationally, I think they're all the same, for specific clients that don't have the space to be able to do that. And that can look like a variety of different things. But where I'm most passionate about is working with clients of color, interracial families, interracial adoptees. And so that's kind of more, if I would say what my expertise is at, is working with families in that way and how I deal with the trauma and work with the trauma and try to navigate through those really hard and difficult things to talk about is one through my relationship with them. So I have to always be aware of my relationship as a therapist with my clients, and also two, being able to do more of experiential work rather than just talk therapy. Especially when working with adolescents, talk therapy I've seen is not always, it's appropriate, but it's not always effective to work with kids if they feel stuck somewhere. That makes sense.
Yeah, I have two questions, follow-up questions around working with people of color, being a woman of color, a person of color. So I have two questions around that. The first one is, do you sometimes experience a reluctance, maybe even a fear from white parents with, for example, a child of color, having a African-American or a child of color? Do you sometimes notice or experience some reluctance to have them work with a person of color, a woman of color, that somehow might be threatening, or they need to, or it's not an issue, maybe they think, being a person of color, being raised in a white family, or even the idea that they might think, well, they live in a white family, they live in a predominantly white culture, so why would we make an effort to have a person of color treat our child?
Yeah, that's a good question, Brad. Because yeah, I've had that. I've witnessed that, and I think a lot of that is normal. I think it's absolutely normal for parents to feel that way, to feel a sense of, I think it all boils, and it goes with everything. It all boils down to, have I done the best that I could as a parent? And so if I am now working and race is being brought up, or my child has to work with or is working with a therapist of color, and these things are being brought up, parents are questioning their ability, as you would in anything. Right. I think it's very universal. They would with anything. Did I do enough? What did I do wrong? And I wish that I would have been this, and I wish I would have been that. The race part of it is tricky because it's an added layer where I think it's an area where parents, and this is what I try to tell parents, it's okay to say that I didn't know and I don't get it.
Right.
And I need to learn more. It's okay. Right. Like, let's normalize that. And also let's normalize that I hate the fact that I don't know more. I hate the fact that I can't connect with my kid in this way, because I want to be present for my kid in this way. So yes, to answer your question, I have seen that. And two, how I deal with that is really normalizing and creating a space where parents feel like it's okay for them to feel some of that. I'm not going to judge them in any kind of way, because that's going to come with the territory. When you're in interracial relationships, I'm in an interracial relationship. My husband is Sicilian and Jewish. And there's a lot that we have to navigate that comes with the territory of being in an interracial relationship. And so I normalize that for parents. So, yeah.
I've asked you this next question before, and because I have such a passion about it, because I'm not a person of color. I'm a white male, and my perspective is my perspective, but you have something just inherent in your experience in life that you bring to the table. My question is this: working with white clients who aren't adopted, you know, what can you offer? Because of your background, training, awareness that you've been sharing with us, what is it that you bring to those clients that you think can be special because of your background and experience? Yeah.
It all goes back and boils down to attachment. And this is why I love working at Evoke, is because we really push the idea of connection and relationship. And so this is why this is so universal in terms of when we're teaching parents and we're teaching clients to be authentically themselves and to show up with everything that they're processing and dealing with, things, maybe parts of them that they have felt like is no good, like they've labeled no good, and I can't share that. And then having a space to be able to do that and have that be reflected and honored and, you know, cared for, that's across the board. And so I offer all my clients that in terms of who are you authentically? We're all different, whether it's skin color, whether it's our gender, our sex, our just in so many different areas, we're all so different and we're all hiding different parts of us. And a lot of these kids, that's what they're doing. They're hiding different parts of them because they've learned that they can't show up. And if you can't show up, then how can you be real and authentic in the relationships that you're in? And so that's what I offer with all my clients, whether they're of color or they're maybe on the spectrum or whatever it is. And so yeah, it's cross.
I think that's beautiful. I was just talking to my therapist about it this week, about the idea of being an outsider and how that's something that, you know, if you grow up as an outsider and have an awareness around that, you can really help other people, because that's really what people are struggling with, is that outside. I like it how Elon Musk, when he designed the Tesla car, he made it a requirement that you could not have worked on electric cars in your past as an engineer. And if you did, he wouldn't hire you because he wanted somebody from outside. He wanted something new, something beyond. And that requires that the person have the experience with being outside and being beyond. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, definitely.
One more question. I've heard you talk about this, but I think it's interesting. It's part of my learning curve and working with you. What have you noticed that we at Evoke have needed to learn? That includes staff, partners, therapists, with regard to race and just our own ignorance. What have you noticed? And I use that word that can have sometimes a loaded kind of negative connotation, but I accept it. What have you noticed that you need to teach us about as you've kind of come to work at Evoke and shared your background, passion, and experience?
Yeah, that is, you know, a loaded question. And I would probably say, I think this is something that I'm experiencing myself. The more the more that I learn, the more that I realize I don't know. Right. And what I am so zealous about at one point in time in my life will most likely change as I continue to learn more things and become more aware. And so even in regards to race, as a person of color, there are so many beliefs that I had 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that I don't necessarily have today. And the reason why is because I learned. So it's a level of awareness. And I think that goes with just mental health in general or any aspect is the more awareness that you have about something, the more that you learn about something, the more it changes, you're open to change your beliefs a little bit or expand a little bit more on it. And so I think that's the biggest thing anywhere. As I work with staff and as I have these conversations with my colleagues here, and I'll talk about certain things, like I'll be on a car with another therapist and we're riding out to the field and we're talking about hair, just hair and just management of hair with our clients out in the field and people's color hair texture compared to smooth hair texture in the dominant culture. And so and talking about that, it's like, and I see therapists are like, I never knew that. Wow. Like, that is good to know. So I'm going to make sure to ask my client what they need or ask more questions about that. So I think that's the biggest thing is being able to have a desire to learn a little bit more that's outside of what your beliefs are, your curiosity in that, one thing. And then the other thing is me being here is me creating proximity. With the colleagues and the staff that I work with, like staff is in proximity with our clients of color and they're in proximity with a therapist of color. And because they're in proximity and they're in relationship with us, they're going to be more likely intrigued and open to learn more about others. Right. And that's with everything. Right. If you have client with, who's on the spectrum or you have a client who identifies as transgender, you're in proximity with those people that identify as others. So therefore you're going to have a different investment, intrigueness, and openness. And so that's probably the biggest thing I would say is to continue to be in proximity and be open to learning and being aware. And sometimes it means being intentional in seeking out information to better equip you to work with clients who are not like you and who are different.
Right. Now, I know this is an interview, so the format of an interview is to be asked questions, but I've wondered this, and maybe this is a short answer, and maybe you even don't want to answer it, I'm not sure, but do you get tired of being asked questions about race?
No, I don't. There's a, I don't get tired of that. There's a reason why. I mean, I've accepted the fact that in order for me to create this space and work with the clients I work with, that's the role that I'm going to play and I'm going to be asked questions. Like anybody would ask me any other question if they want to learn about more about depression, if they want to learn about anxiety, if they want to learn about all this other stuff, they're going to ask and seek out. And so I am willing to, you know, answer those questions and be there. The one thing is, though, I have to do my own work. If I don't do my own work, and this is the thing that we're seeing, and this is part of just my perspective, is a lot of people that are doing some of this work in regards to anti-racism or racial work and that kind of stuff, there's a lot of strife in it. And I questioned and I wonder, okay, how many of those people are actually doing their own work? Because if you're not doing your own work and you're not dealing with your own trauma in regards to race or depression or whatever it may be, then you're more likely to get triggered. And so if I'm not doing my therapist where I'm talking about racial issues and I'm talking about and processing where I have felt different and how it's affected me as an individual, then of course I come to work and people say certain things, whether it be ignorant or whatever it is or not knowing or just being overtly racist, then I am going to be triggered by that. And I'm not going to be in a place to be able to hold space for that. So I have to do my own work in order to hold space to work with the clients that I work with, especially with white parents. Like I work with white parents all the time. And there's things that white parents feel and say and think that maybe other POCs or a person of color would not be able to hold that space to do that work with those parents. Right. But because I do my own work, I'm able to hold space for those parents to see them in that and not perpetuate shame for thinking or believing the way that they did, but actually process that with them for them to see something different.
I think my next question, because you made mention of this earlier, was about how you continue to grow. What if anything is new for you? Some things you've learned new about the clients that you work with?
Yeah, there's an experience that I had. I went to the Attach conference that was in Arizona this past year, and this Attach conference is mostly geared towards parents and clinicians around adopted families, adopted kids, and kids in foster care. And it's a lot about attachment work, hence why it's called the Attach Conference. Very great mm-hmm. information. And there was, we had like a little networking night dinner, and I had a young man of color. He was biracial, I'm assuming. I didn't know specifically what his race was, but biracial he seemed. He came up to me. He was adopted in a white family, lived in white neighborhoods and predominantly. And he was asking, what do I do for work? And it was me and several other Evoke colleagues there as well. And he was just asking what we did. And we told him about wilderness therapy, which he was just floored about. He had never heard of something like that before. And so he was super excited to hear that that existed. And when I talked about the specific group that I work with out in the field, I was like, yeah, I work with young adolescent boys of color out in the field. And we just talk about, life, the things that they struggle with. And a lot of the times we talk about race and what it means to be adopted and the things that come with, the implications that come with that, or even the strengths, the good things that come with that. And then we talk about race stuff. And he was very shocked and surprised by that. He stepped away and then he came back and he said, I want to know a little bit more about what you did, because that surprises me that you work with a group of kids out there about that. So can you talk to me a little bit more about that? So I did. I broke it down to him a bit more. And I remember at that moment, it was probably the most tender conversation I have had outside of being out in the field with my clients. But this kid was just like, I feel so heard and seen by you guys, just hearing the work that you guys do, because I have not been able, I've seen many therapists, and I've never been told that I can normalize the way I feel with being a person of color in a white family. I've never had a safe place to be able to talk about some of the things I struggle with that. And the fact that you guys do that is, he was just shocked by it and touched by it, because he felt like, therapists did not know how to have these conversations. And he felt like there was always an elephant in the room and it was always uncomfortable. And he felt it was too uncomfortable. So why bring it up? And so I think the more and more that I work with the clients that I work with, and I see I see more of a need. I see a need. And parents a lot of the time say, that's not an issue because my kid never brings it up. That's concerning for me. And that's what I've learned. If your kid never brings up that they have a hard time navigating and being who they are as a person of color within a dominant culture, then that's a red flag. That should always be something that's been brought up. It should always be brought up. And so that's probably the one thing I learned is that, these kids want to talk about it. They just don't know where and how to talk about it.
That's a really cool story. Thank you for sharing it. Cool. And it reminds me, it's the same thing I've experienced with working with kids with adoption or that might have LGBTQ issues, that their parents will say that same thing. Like, it's not a big deal. It's not on the forefront. Mm-hmm. And they don't take into consideration that even unconsciously, this child is protecting the parent from information or discussion that might feel threatening to that parent. Yeah. So I really, really appreciate that story and that perspective.
Yeah. And they learn it. They learn that from the parents in some ways. And a lot of it happens in a very subconscious way, or just not even realizing that you're doing that as parents. But there seems to be this covert message, right? This over message of, that's not safe to talk about because that can cause a lot of conflict and I don't want to cause conflict. So for the sake of protecting my parents and making sure I don't make them feel uncomfortable, I'm going to make myself, I'm going to pretty much minimize myself and hide parts of me that should be talked about.
It's really important, really important idea. As you mentioned, we met each other online and social media through one of your posts and we connected there. And since then, of course, I've noticed and observe with admiration and respect how passionate and active you are on social media. And it's not just that you're taking pictures of your dogs, which you do that too. You do that kind of stuff too, but you're also constantly teaching. You love to teach. You love to share your insight and perspective. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about that passion that you have, what you do there, and even provide the listeners of this podcast with the place to go to find you so that they can listen and follow you like I do.
Yeah, definitely. I love social media. as a, you know, active member of this generation today in terms of Instagram and being online, I think that's the fastest way to share information. It's also mm-hmm. the fastest and the easiest way to normalize things. I'm a big believer that, you know, social media can be detrimental in some ways, the use of social media. And so my passion, my desire is to utilize social media the best in a very positive way. How am I contributing right. to society to better it, to help it, and to give people information that otherwise wouldn't get this information? And we know that there's a lot of information online. And so, yeah, I use my social media to promote mental health. And that's mental health in, especially in the aspects of wilderness therapy, outdoor adventure. There's not, about 4 years ago, I was born and raised in Jersey. And I never had access really to the outdoors until about 4 years ago when I was in Vegas. I went out and I was hiking and I fell in love with it. And I saw, mm-hmm. it was just so relieving for me. It was very healing in so many different ways. And from that moment and that point in time, I always knew that was going to be something that was going to be an integral part of my life. My growth, my healing process, emotionally, mentally, even spiritually. And so one thing that I did notice is that there weren't a lot of people that looked like me in representation of people of color out in outdoor recreation, or even through representation online and on social media and that kind of stuff. And so I had decided that I'm going to use my social media to be an advocate and represent a number of different things online. And that's one, me being a woman of color, doing outdoor recreational activity and having access to outdoor activities. It's not always easy, but what does it mean to have it accessible and to seek out that adventure? And then also to partner that up with mental health. Like, what are the benefits? And research says, and this is why we do wilderness therapy, there's so many different effectiveness in regards to wilderness therapy or outdoor, just being out in nature in regards to our mental health or spiritual health and so forth. And so I use my social media platform to advocate both of those things as a person of color, not just as that, but also just mental health in general, and making sure that that information is accessible for all people. And I also love connecting. There is an underground of people that identify as others, whether they're part of the queer community, they're on the spectrum, they're disabled, or anything like that, that are also representing themselves in the outdoors. And I love building relationships and connecting with them and collaborating in so many different ways. And so that's how I do that and bring that out mm-hmm. to the community to better affect them, to help them. If you want to follow me on social media, it is Sedora Wellness. So it's at Sedora Wellness on Instagram.
You know, Judith, I'm gonna share a thought with you that I learned in working with the LGBTQ community, and see if you have any thoughts about it with regard to racial issues. I was taught mm-hmm. by a therapist that some people in the LGBTQ community don't want to be spokesperson. You obviously do; it's your passion. I feel the same way about mental health and addiction. But some mm-hmm. people that are outsiders, some people that identify a certain way, don't want to be spokespeople. They just want to live their lives, right? They don't want to be somebody that's gay, for example, doesn't want to be have to bear that burden, that extra burden of being the spokesperson for it. And a lot of times that's true of children, especially, or people that are kind of newly developing their identity. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about that, because it's definitely not you. You are a spokesperson and an advocate. But just for parents that might be listening to this, to think about that with their children and to ask their children the question about that's why I asked you earlier how you felt about it or if you tire of it, because I have that awareness that for some people, they don't want to be the spokesperson.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I didn't start off with being an advocate in this way or being a spokesperson in this way in regards to mental health or being a person of color and identifying as that. I first had to do my own work, right? I had to have a safe place to be able to navigate and talk about these things. And then from that place, it's connected to my passion and who I am. And I made the decision of, okay, what do I want to do with this? And a lot of people make the decision to do, they develop and they find out who they are and they're getting to know, and that's a journey and that's a process. But through that, they identify, okay, what do I want to do? What's my passion? What's my desire? And I think for parents, being able to first have the conversations that are really hard to have with your kids, and creating that space for them to talk about the things that are really difficult, depending on what they identify as. And then from there, again, putting it in their court. What do you want to do? What do you desire? Because you're right. There's people that I want to just live a normal life. And even that, even though I'm an advocate and a spokesperson, like, I would say that I live a normal life, you know? It's right. Within that, though. It's within my passion and my desire. Part of this, me being an advocate and me being a person that shares in this way, I was always that before I started doing my work.
Right.
I was always that. I was the kind of kid, actually just recently created a post where I was the kind of kid that was on the videotape dancing and laughing and singing. I was always that person because that's a part of me, just outgoing and love to be, you know, I love to entertain people. Right. And so it's not necessarily, I don't think it's about here you find out who you are and now you have to find out what job or what way you're going to deal with who you are. It's not necessarily about that. I think it's about who are you in general, your personality trait, and incorporating that in what you're passionate about.
Love it.
In any way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. That makes a lot of sense. You know, I want to talk about upcoming events, but even before I get to that question, you've done a podcast for us in the past. You've done the title of that podcast, if you recall, the title of the podcast, so that people can look through our library and go back to that. Do you recall?
Yeah. So there was a first podcast I did that talks about social graces and racial identity. And then the second one was mostly about attachment and trauma and like identity work and right. race. So yeah, that's two podcasts that you can go back and listen to as a resource for parents.
Wonderful. So yeah, upcoming. Tell us about upcoming events that you're a part of. And promoting mental health and wellness, and that you'd like us all to know about.
Yes, I'm super excited for these new projects that are coming up, Brad, and I'm hoping that it would be beneficial to the community in any kind of way that it can be. So the intensives that we have at the Evoke Summit Lodge, I have had the pleasure of doing them with you as well as with our clinical director. And so I have wanted to lead one and actually just really dive more into that work and using that experiential work to work with individuals and families and et cetera. And so I will actually be leading the Finding You intensive that's coming up in January 8th to the 12th. And another project that I'm so excited for is I would love to create a space where, again, normalizing mental health in certain communities, and this community is community of women that identify as a POC, a person of color. And so we are doing a Women of Color intensive June 18th to the 21st this summer, which I'm super excited. It's going to be the first one that I will be leading there at the Evoke Summit Lodge. And I'm really looking forward to it. I want to create a space where we can navigate and talk about, I think this is another point when I think about it too, Brad, is we talk about universal things and how I can work with many different people that identify as whatever they identify, right? So we all experience the same type of thing. Like shame is processed the same way in some way.
Right.
You know, trauma is processed the same ways at times. And relationship dynamics, like whether you feel heard by your parents or whether you feel, you know, respected by your kid or seen or loved by your kid. I mean, we all experience that universally. The only thing that's different is within the context of that. And so my desire for the Women of Color intensive coming up is that we're going to process the things that's pretty universal. I mean, depression, anxiety, dynamics and relationships, we all go through that. And that's, as human beings, we can connect in that area. The thing that's different is how it's delivered and the context within that. The specific things that we're going to be talking about in regards to what it means to be maybe a woman of color in a predominantly white space, and how have you navigated that? Or what kind of self-esteem or narratives or stories you say to yourself in regards to the way that you look and your skin tone and your hair? Or what does relationships look like when you're in intimate relationships or not? And so it's specific to the demographic. And so that's what I'm super excited for, is to be able to create this space for specific demographics to come together and feel like, okay, I'm among people that have experienced the same similar things that I have within the same context as well too.
Well, that project is so exciting to me. I can't tell you, and you've probably heard the same thing probably more than I have, how many times I've had people of color come up to me saying, where are people that look like me, where I can do my work with somebody that I can relate to in that area, in that way, on that level. And so I'm so grateful that you're doing it. I want to shout that from the rooftops, right? I want everybody within the sound of your voice to get that out there, because it is so needed. And I imagine it's going to be, as all of those are, very, very wonderful, and very, very wonderful for people to be able to attend. So thank you for that. And thank you for everything you bring to us, Judith. You've made us and me better. And for that, I'm grateful. And your passion is infectious, right? It's it affects everybody around you in our organization. And of course, maybe the most important thing is the people that you work with, the children and the families, mm-hmm. their parents that you get to work with, talk to me and talk to others about so passionately about how grateful they are that you're in their life. So thank you for all that you do.
Thank you so much, Brad. I really appreciate the encouragement, and I look forward to continuing to work together.
All right, folks, thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye. Bye.